In the first deployment, OIF one, I had it in my head, I think a lot of us did, they're like, dude, we won, it's over. You know, there was no foreshadowing, at least at our level, that this was going to last fucking 20 years, which is crazy to even say out loud, you know, 20 years. So I thought it was done. And then, like, I'm home, loving life. Go back to Kansas, my hometown, see my family. They're so excited that I'm back. And, you know, then I go back to the Marine Corps and, oh, by the way, you're going to Fallujah in a few months. You know, you're going back. And it's like, holy fuck, what's Fallujah? You know, like, what's, we're going back? Like, I thought, like, we made it to Baghdad. We took out the military. It's over with. Like, nope, this is the occupying phase, you know? So, and then it just started continuing, you know, and deployment started coming.
Welcome to another edition to the Kick Cage, and please give a very warm welcome to Jason Lilly. How are you, Jason?
I'm good, bro. I'm good. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much for joining us on the show. You are a former Marine infantryman, recon, sniper, MARSOC. Then join the CIA. That is one hell of a resume, and I'm sure that's some serious life experience that we're going to talk about over this coming episode.
Yeah, it's been a trip, my friend. Never thought I'd ever do anything like any of that, to be honest with you. You know, talking to you previously right before we hit record, you know, it's I'm in a unique state, kind of coming full circle myself, kind of looking back from third person, like, how did I end up there, and why did I decide to join and get out, and, you know, all of it. Looking back, it's been a trip. It's been a good experience and a hard experience, but here we are.
Over the episodes that I've done, I've sort of got the assumption that there is a certain type of childhood that operators of a certain level experience, for some reason, there's circumstance that ends up with them being operating at a tier one level. It's never that they have a bad childhood. Some of them a good childhood, but the majority come from separations, separated families. They're usually quite sensitive, emotional, creative. And for some reason, it's that sort of character that sort of makes a very good tier one operator. Would you surmise in saying that you would have fitted that character at your young age? I know that your parents had divorced, but what about, who was Jason at that sort of age?
I mean, you probably nailed it in that one paragraph to a T, from what I've seen in my own perspective of other operators and specifically myself, for sure. You know, I was a sports kid. You know, I played baseball. I was outside a lot. I fished. I was a band geek. You know, I played the French horn. So my parents were big time musicians. So I had this musical influence and teachers. And my parents did separate. They did divorce. I went through three divorces by age 14. And that last one was kind of the one that broke me, self-esteem wise and self-perception wise, and what led me to the military, to be honest with you. What's what led me to, I wanted to become tough. You know, I wanted to be a man. I wanted to learn how to fight and get the ladies and, you know, really get some confidence in something, like earn something for myself. Right. So, and I love my parents to death, and, you know, now that I'm older, almost 44, there's no guidebook to life, you know? Yeah. There are right and wrongs, right? But everyone's trying their best at the time with the tools that they have at the time. And I see that now. So I've made a lot of the same mistakes, you know, and that's a humbling thing and a cool thing if you look at it that way, in the sense of, like, wow, you know, it humbles you that, damn, not everyone's perfect, you know? And I don't know. I think if you just keep trying and pushing forward, you know, that's the answer, is never stop, never quit, always drive to improve and learn and listen, probably more than anything. And I still have a lot of listening to do. So
I think we all do. So going through that, you said that at that stage you wanted to become a man and you wanted to join the military. What was it that pointed you in the direction of the Marines rather than the Army, and why that MOS, and particularly, you know, a Marine infantry and then choosing all those different MOSs?
Yeah, man. First of all, I never thought I'd ever be in the military. You know, I smoked a lot of weed in high school and partied. I was very social in the sense of I was friends with everyone. And I, you know, I think anyone looking back that knew me at that time would have never thought I'd ever be in the military. You know, I was a super skinny kid, 6'2" and probably weighed 155, 160 pounds. You'd blow away in the wind, and a lover more than a fighter for sure. Fighting scared the shit out of me in high school. You know, I was that guy that was friends with everyone. And there was one person in my life that was a military guy. That was my grandfather, who fought in World War II, you know, and like a lot of our, from the UK side to the American side, that was a world war, you know, and we fought to legit adversaries at that time. And my grandfather, like a lot of our grandfathers were, didn't really have a choice. They were part of that. And he was in the Navy. So I just had this affinity towards the military. I'd say one word, it would be respect. And just, I knew it was super heavy. I knew it was almost ineffable, like, to describe the stories that I heard, and honestly, a very similar experience as to what we endured, right? But I just knew at a young age, there was just something special about it, something to respect about it. And I couldn't quite place it, but it was there. But again, it was so distant and so foreign, you know, and I always looked at the military as something, I don't know, out of my reach, or just something I didn't want to do. And then a roommate was the one that kind of brought up the military to me, and specifically the Marines, and specifically Recon Marines. Yeah. And there was one movie in particular that I watched called Clear and Present Danger. Yeah. And it was kind of a bad example of Recon Marines because I got fucked up in this, you know, there's this, the Hispanic guy, the Latin dude, talking about it. He was like the one sole survivor, if I remember right. You know, he's been in a couple cool 90s and early 2000s movies. He always played a tough guy. And I was just like, damn, those dudes, you know, because we all heard about the SEALs, but who is this other unit that's like six-man teams going behind enemy lines? You know, I'm like, wow, it's that. He was the one that brought it up to me. So I think that was like the candle, the wick that got lit, at least the idea. And it started to become a small goal, like something I was slowly, you know, climbing towards physically. Now I was starting to run, you know, I was starting to do some push-ups, and you know, the mind was starting to slowly crank into this heartbeat, into this rhythm towards that direction. And almost joined the Army, and I had a recruiter take me to Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. I'm from Kansas originally, and this is before cell phones, really, man. This was like pagers and shit. And he like took me to this Army base, and like, I just got a really bad taste in my mouth for the Army, man. And really kind of the military in a way. And this, he had a page on his, like, you know, his pager, and he's like, hey, hang out with these young Joes. There's like this infantry unit there training or getting back from training. He's like, go talk to these kids, basically these young Joes, like young PFCs or whatnot. And I'll go make this phone call. And as soon as I was alone with these guys, they're like, yo, dude, don't fucking do it, man. It sucks. Like, and I was like, what? He's like, yeah, fucking go to college. Go like hang out with chicks, man. Like, don't, this fucking sucks. And I was just like, Jesus. You know, so it kind of scared me, man. For like 2 years, I didn't really do shit. And I ended up joining the Marine Corps in 2000 at the age of 20. So I had a 2 year kind of, you know, in America, I don't know how it is in the UK, but like 18 is when 90% of the people join, to be honest. So I had a 2 year break of just kind of figuring my life out and partying way too much and working dead end jobs at a young age, car washing and washing dishes and just grunt work, you know. And I'm like, fuck, if I'm going to be a grunt, might as well go into the military and be a grunt. So that was the decision. And it wasn't like this monumental thing. It was just, there was something hard about the Marine Corps that, I don't know, there was just something different to it that struck me in a different way compared to the other branches, for sure.
Going back to that sort of two year gap year that you took before joining the military, saying that you took those demeanial jobs, those mundane jobs, do you think that perhaps taught you some mental resilience and perhaps, you know, put you in good stead for joining the military, for doing your basic training rather than just going in at the age of 18?
I do, man, just because I probably now in hindsight worked, you know, kind of like some of the hardest jobs in the sense of like social status. You know, it wasn't like I was, you know, this kick-ass salesman, you know, driving a Bentley or something, you know, and like had the gift of gab. You know, I was like literally washing dishes in the back of a shitty restaurant, you know, and I had these dreams of, and they were so distant. I didn't know what my future looked like. And just literally hour by hour listening to heavy metal. I was a metal guy, like, you know, kind of angry at the world in a lot of ways, but I didn't know how the fuck I was going to get out of this situation, but I just kept doing it, you know. And honestly, I felt so out of place for the longest time. And in hindsight, you know, a lot of Marines and service members do kind of feel out of place to some degree. And I think that is kind of some of the human condition, but I noticed in the Marines, you know, once I got in there, I was like, damn, a lot of these guys grew up very similar to I did. And like these kind of misfits that all kind of came together. And we, you know, became an extended part of my family for sure. So yeah, they all led up to it, dude. Cause I went through some hardships of like having a dollar in my pocket and eating. You know, we got these gas stations here called Quick Trip in the Midwest and East Coast called QT, Quick Trip. And I'd buy one fucking sandwich and that was my meal for the day, you know? And like, I was 18, 19. My parents had a bunch of kids and were split up and I had too much pride to ask them for fucking help at that time, you know? And I was pretty much kicked out anyway, cause I was, you know, a troublemaker and staying out way too late. So, you know, during that time frame anyway. So, yeah, dude, it all gave me some, you know, some leather on the skin, at least. I would say it wasn't rock bottom. It was fucking kind of close to it, you know? And I'm like, fuck, dude, if I can go through all this, like anything's going to be better than this, right? Living in a party apartment with like two other dudes and not really ever getting any sleep. And I was like, dude, I'm out of here. So I would say, yeah, it definitely led to the Marine Corps and mindset.
Going through your basic training, who was your male role model? Who did you look up to the most during that time period?
I'd say, you know, in the Marine Corps, it's 13 weeks of boot camp. And for the most part, the drill instructors are they're pogues, you know, they're not combatant fighters. They're not infantrymen. They're not recon dudes. We usually kind of just stay in our own realm for the most part. And randoms come into the DI field, but in boot camp, I had some drill instructors that were cool, but there was one that sticks out. And it's funny you even ask this, because there's one I would still like to talk to this day. His name was Staff Sergeant, I think, Rosado, a light-skinned Hispanic guy, R-O-S-A-D-O, excuse me, R-O-S-A-D-O. And he was a stud, man. He was a little skinny. The dude could run like the fucking wind, but like he was hard as fuck too, man. He was tough, but he was, I don't know, man, there was something about him, but I like looked up to this dude and literally did everything he fucking said to a T. You know, I didn't want to like disappoint this dude. So if I could talk to that guy now, I'd like to talk to him. So, yeah.
Moving forward, at what point did you choose your specialization then? Because obviously going from Marine infantry, you could branch off in several directions. Why or how did you put paperwork in to go towards recon and sniper?
Right. So to me, the meat potatoes, the heartbeat of the Marine Corps is the infantryman. You know, yeah. 311 is, you are the guy carrying a shield and a sword. You know, for the king and the queen, for the president. It's the same shit.
Yeah.
The titles change over the years, but you are the fucking basic soldier. And that is, that's square one. That's fucking letter A, you know? And I'm so glad I chose the grunt route first. But I could back it up even further. When I was going through at the time called SOI, School of Infantry, there were guys trying out for recon at the time, but I was so overwhelmed at just being a fucking basic Marine and just learning how to fucking tie my boots and like survive and like not get my teeth kicked in, you know, just do the job, just learning. Cause it was such a culture shock, as you know, coming from the streets to this military, you know, this military might. So I would say I did a deployment in 2002. So I joined in 2000, and in 2002, I went to Okinawa, Japan as an infantryman with 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines, very famous battalion that went to Fallujah in 04. Mm-hmm. And it was about that time on that deployment, 6-month deployment to Okinawa, that I had stopped kind of smoking. I had stopped drinking a lot. You know, as a young guy, 20, 19 to 21, we all drank, fuck, as you know, way too fucking much. Mm-hmm. I would have do it all over again, probably. But save my money a little bit more. But yeah, I started running a lot, man, and found out I was actually really good at running. And I loved swimming too. So the recon side is heavy in the amphibious side. So I started swimming my ass off and, you know, swimming with bricks out of the water, training for this. This is before the internet was giant. So I started learning about recon and I'm like, I'm going to fucking try out for it. So we had a tryout in Okinawa, Japan in 2002 on that deployment, and it was a full day event. You know, there was a mental aptitude test, basically, you know, to see, you already did the test, I did it a look to see if you're, you know, your scores were X, Y, and Z, and luckily mine was by the skin of my teeth. And physically I gave it my all, plus 22, you're pretty young, you're not banged up like we are now. So yeah, man, that was the side where I decided to part ways. And all my boys in my platoon were pretty fucking supportive. I had one that told me I wasn't going to make it, though. I remember he was an older dude named Sergeant Hutton. And I thank him to this day, to be honest. He was that guy. I was like, you'll never make it, Lily. My last name's Lily. He's like, you'll never make it, Lily. And I fucking use that for everything. You know, fuck you. I'm going to do this. So
do you think that's why he said it? Just to give you that extra bit of fuck you motivation?
No, he meant it. No. yeah, he meant it, dude. He was this big old, I mean, giant dude. You look like a character off of a video game, man. You know, and I think every platoon and every service member has the story of this, like, kind of big ogre fucking dude. And he was a scrapper for sure. Not a dude I ever want. I mean, he was old as fuck too. To me at that age, he might've been fucking 30 when I was like 22. And, you know, he was married, he lived off base, and he was just mean as shit. So, but I don't know. It was a challenge, you know, him telling me that I couldn't do it. So, and I started using all these failures in my life as like momentum and some pain and anger that I had inside of me to use as fuel to crush, at least push myself to the fucking max. So he was a voice in my head that was definitely there for a long time, especially at that time.
So at this stage then, what would be the biggest differences between you as your younger iteration, you know, creative, sensitive, scared of a fight, to how you are now at this age? What would be the biggest differences you would recollect
between my current self and old self? I would say that's a tough question, man. I'm not as emotional in the sense of, maybe I'm as emotional, but the ability to control, it's just part of becoming an older man, is just the ability to control your emotions, and to, when you feel those same emotions, be able to reel it back in. You know, as I start to feel my anger and temper or sadness or even happiness, to reel it back to center. You know, like before it was fucking 0 to 100 fucking quick. And, you know, I was like throwing a temper tantrum as a kid, you know, like just fucking loud and banging shit around just to bring attention to the situation and how you're feeling. It's like just you know, an expression of this mess of feelings that you have in your head and your heart. But now it's I feel more of a pause, you know what I'm saying? And I want to feel that. I want to think things through more. I didn't do that then, you know, it was real quick and kind of dramatic, you know, as we were as young men. So now it's just, you know, like I said, I'm 43 now, you know, it's just, I would say controlling myself a lot better and the things that I say a lot more.
What was your first combat deployment? Because obviously Okinawa, training deployment. So I would imagine you would be going to the Middle East for your first combat deployment. What was going through your mind as you were heading to that first kinetic deployment?
You know, excited. I was now at recon at this point. I just left the basic reconnaissance course at the time. I think it's actually called RTC, but at the time it's called BRC, which was in Coronado, California, Camp Pendleton, the second half. And you train for it, man. So it was like, you know, as in UK language, you know, like it was the football team training, you know, for the playoffs. And I finally got to go to the fucking real game. You know, this is it. We made it to the NFL. So this is no shit. So I definitely had some fear, but that fear keeps you hypervigilant and awake and aware. This isn't a joke. This makes you perform better. Because I think if you went in there lazy and complacent, you're going to get yourself or someone else killed or delayed reaction, I should say, when you need to react quickly. So yeah, I would say just surreal, you know, like we grew up on Rambo, Platoon, video games and movies and TV shows and books and holy fuck, like this is my generation. Like this is our war. This is our Vietnam. You know, this is my grandfather's World War II. I'm invading another fucking country. Like this is crazy. You know, with the military might, you know, so it was, I mean, it was chaotic. It was boring. It was exciting, you know, depends on the hour really. So, yeah, I mean, pretty surreal to be honest, especially at a young age. I was 23.
Do you think you were mentally prepared at that age to experience that?
It's a really good question. I don't think so. Comparatively how I am now, I think I would be a lot more methodical and a lot more resilient potentially now. Yeah. Because, you know, I've been to Japan and a few other countries at that point, but going to Iraq at 23, I don't know. I felt like I didn't have much control over a lot of the situations, and that is true. But I think now, I don't know, I'd just be a little bit more aware and awake and not so tunnel visioned as I was then.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like geospatial, like I was so focused on just like my sector, for lack of a better word. So now I think I would be, as an older guy, just more receptive to conversations that I'm hearing, especially from higher ups, from superiors, that I'd be more involved in such a lot of ways too. I'd be a better teammate for sure. To be honest with you. But yeah, I mean, 23, 18, 19, 20, it's all kind of the same age. It's a young age, you know? So yeah.
What was the first experience in Iraq that probably put you on the back foot thinking, you know, you've had the excitement of, you know, this is what you've been trained to do. You've gone into country. Like you said, you've heard your grandfather's stories. Like you said, you were living it. But what was your first experience that took you back and thinking, shit, this is real. Something could seriously go wrong.
Well, I mean, it was portrayed in the HBO miniseries, man, Generation Kill. So it was Nasiriyah was the first time. So we crossed the border in Iraq on the way up to Baghdad. And Nasiriyah was the first town that I saw any combat. And we didn't get into a lot of it, but I mean, it was the first time that there was an enemy. the whole fucking way up there, at least where we were at, was pretty fucking boring. And then we get there, started hearing artillery, started seeing cobras, started seeing Huey, started seeing explosions at night under night vision goggles, you know. But the first time I heard a snap of a real round snap by me and break the sound barrier was the first time that I became awake. And awake in the sense of, I think it was just, you're so fueled with testosterone and invincibility at a young age. That was the first time that I was like, holy fuck, there is another human being that wants to end me, an unknown face, an unknown men, group of men, an unknown man that wants to end my fucking individual life. And like, I'm not ready to die. So some people, I think, at that moment would cower. I didn't cower, but it was the first time that I just realized, like, dude, I'm ready to fucking fight. And I'm also like, holy shit, I'm only 23. Yeah. You know, I realized how short life was in that one fucking moment. That one day was just like, holy shit, it could all be over. And I haven't done anything that I truly want to do. I want to make it out of this situation. One, two, I want to make it home. Three, I would like to do X, Y, and Z for the rest of my life. And it could be over now. And also realized, damn, I've wasted a lot of time. Even at 23, I'm like, fuck, I really had it really good back home in a lot of ways, even though it was hard in its own ways, but it's all relative to time and place and your mindset at the time. But, you know, I realized, like, damn, there's a Walmart and a grocery store and a fucking, you know, so much ease of living, especially in a first world country in America. And damn, this is like, this is it. This is, could be it. This could be the last day.
Do you think that realization at that age, at that moment, do you think that aged you quite significantly just at that right moment, just hearing that snap as the 7.62 shot past you? Do you think that was an aging process that was just personified on you right there and then?
100%. And I think, you know, we hear people talk about near-death experiences. I watch all these documentaries and we see all these interviews with other people, right? But like, it's, you just realize it could be over so fast. And I don't have really any control over my life at this point. Like, it's, I got my little section, I can only do X, Y, and Z. And it's like, you kind of have to let, it's almost like that, you know, old samurai mindset, dude. You almost have to fight like you're dead. And I've already heard this before at this point from famous Rudy Reyes. You know, he's a little older than I was. And it's true. You kind of have to let it all go. And like, it's almost like this Zen-like approach to being in that moment. You have to kind of go by minute, 5 minutes by 5 minutes, hour by hour, and just be thankful that you're fucking still breathing, breath by breath. Like, it's, you know, you can only do so much. So you just kind of let a lot of it go and just you're hyper aware, hyper vigilant, and you're so in that moment. Things do start to slow down and you start to see everything, you know. It's like limitless in a sense. And obviously there's like a lot of chemical releases going on, but you're awake. I mean, truly awake, because your life, it could be, you could be asleep permanently soon. So yeah, it definitely aged me, man. And it made me, you know, it made me a lot of different things. So, but it definitely made me more, I don't know, in a unique way, in on the back end of things, I think it made me value life a lot more too.
I think the way I was told it was, once you realize you're already dead, then you can become a soldier.
Yep.
It's strange. It's you're doing it without the fear of what might happen to you. You're doing it for the job, for the person next to you. Yeah. Once you've got the realization that you're already dead, then you can do your job as a soldier. Yeah, you mentioned the documentary there. Have you sat down and watched it yourself?
I went to, there was a couple premieres. There was one on Camp Pendleton, you know, in California, the military base. And I went to that one, and there was the Hollywood one, which I didn't go to, but I went to the one at the base theater And some of the actors were there. The guy that played me was not, but there were some others there. So I got to watch, I think they only played one episode, I believe. So, and still to this day, it's pretty surreal. I grew up on HBO. You know, it's pretty surreal that there was a movie made, you know, a 7-part series about my guys, about us, myself and us 23 guys, you know, so it's still pretty surreal. To be honest with you, but I've never watched the whole thing. I still haven't.
Because when, they've done obviously series like Band of Brothers, Pacific, and then yeah, you know, to have one done so quickly about, you know, our generation fighting a war, it must have been so surreal. And I'm sure I've read somewhere that did you actually try out to play yourself in the series, but actually got turned down?
Yeah, man. If that tells you anything about Hollywood, you know, I'm not hateful. I was a little butthurt about it, but it's like, you think you just show up, be like, yo, it's me. You know, like I mean, it's not like it was a significant part in the movie, right? In the sense of, I don't know, we're all equals in a platoon. And, you know, they're like, you got your mom and your dad, you know, you got your platoon sergeant, your team leader and shit, but like, everyone's kind of doing a very similar equal piece of the pie for the most part and cover it down where the other one's lacking and vice versa. So I don't know. I think you just show up and breathe and be like, hey, I'm Jason. Damn, you sound just like him. Yeah, I'm him. So didn't get my fucking part, but the people there were actually sweethearts. They took care of me. So and even that experience was pretty fucking fun. I got to meet the producer and the director. So and I've since become friends with Kellen, who actually did play me. And he's actually one hell of a guy. So, yeah, good dude. And he's got a brother or two, I think two brothers that are Marines as well. Surprisingly.
Oh, wow. So there's a good connection there for the
there person. Is. Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah, he's a cool cat.
Coming home after your first deployment, how was that for you? Going from, you know, that kinetic environment, experiencing that, having that age defining moment in a third world country, and then suddenly coming home to a first world country, you know, the thought process that must be going through your head, still being hypervigilant, perhaps, you know, not quite believing everything you've been through. What was that experience for you?
I've always been pretty good at like compartmentalizing, like a lot of us. So I was able to really flip a switch and let my guard down for the most part, I would say overall. One, I was really fucking excited to come back to California and just come home,
yeah.
You know? And the first deployment, OIF-1, I had it in my head, and I think a lot of us did, they're like, dude, we won, it's over. You know, there was no foreshadowing, at least at our level, that this was going to last fucking 20 years. Which is crazy to even say out loud, you know, 20 years. So I thought it was done. And then like, I'm home, loving life, go back to Kansas, my hometown, see my family. They're so excited that I'm back. And, you know, then I go back to the Marine Corps and, oh, by the way, you're going to Fallujah in a few months, you know, you're going back. And it's like, holy fuck, what's Fallujah, you know? Like, what's, we're going back? Like, I thought, like, we made it to Baghdad. We took out the military. It's over with. Like, nope, this is the occupying phase, you know? So, and then it just started continuing, you know, and deployment started coming and coming and coming. And, you know, I liked, dude, it's a extreme sport. You know, there's no other sport. And I think it's Kipling that said it, if I remember right, but there's no greater thrill basically than the hunting of another human being, hunting of man. And there is some truth to that because there's, you know, death defying sports, you know, there's, I've surfed big waves, you know, I've done some crazy shit and they get you going. Right. But it's, you start living through a lot of these firefights. You really do get used to this hyper intense moment. And then you come back home and then you're in line at the grocery store, you know, and it's just like, you know, the Kardashians are fucking jacking their jaw about clothes and gossip. And then I'm just like, you know, I started that was like as real as you can get, you know. There's just something about it. Then you come back here, like things are really slow. So it's real easy to get addicted to the feeling of like living through a fight and going kinetic and then coming back. Then there's that lull. It's an ebb and a flow. And you really get used to that, that dopamine, those endorphin hit too of going through that, that hypervigilance, that adrenaline fucking surge. There is a natural drug your body's producing, and then it fucking, boom, you get back to base and you pass the fuck out. You know, you're wiped out, obviously, because you've been like on meth basically for fucking days, and that your own body's producing, and then now it's over, you know, and then you go back home, you know, and you're excited to go home for sure. But, you know, it's a fucking wild ride, man. It's a wild ride.
Do you think a lot of people probably struggle coming back from that environment where you're so hypervigilant and you're almost craving that chaos of a firefight to come back home, to be stood in Walmart doing your grocery shopping? Do you think, you know, perhaps a lot of people probably struggled with that and actually found destructive behaviors to try and get that same sort of feeling while they were back home?
Yeah, and maybe not even purposefully, but like subliminally, and like just kind of somehow end up in that position. And, you know, I'll speak frankly about it, but I think the drinking definitely helps you get into these positions that aren't good, you know.
Yeah,
we drink so much, and I'm not anti-alcohol. I'm not anti-smoking weed. I don't do it, but if that's your thing, cool. But it's like anything, too much sex, too much water, too much fucking chocolate, too much of anything is a bad fucking thing. You got to find a fucking balance. Yeah. And being sober most of the time, I think, is the best way to handle the stress of all of it. Yeah, man, I 100%, I think most of us do, at different levels, whether it be just kind of disconnecting emotionally or not having... I like to sum it up to, you do enough of it, man, especially it's a male trait in general. Like, I think it's the older you get, you know, you become a man of a fewer words, and it's somewhat harder for you to express. Sometimes I think it's even hard for me to understand what feelings I'm feeling, yet let alone express those feelings and feeling safe to express those feelings. And who the fuck am I going to express those to? Probably one of my boys, but to a significant other, you know, I don't know. It's sometimes it's kind of tough being a dude, you know, like it's especially with our backgrounds, you know what I'm saying? It's real easy for us to get trapped in our heads, you know, and days turn into weeks and weeks turn into months of isolation in a sense. And you could even be around other people, but just isolation in the sense of opening up about X, Y, and Z. So, and having the ability to open up and the strength to let your guard down and to feel safe to talk about some of these things, right? And not to feel weak about it, right? And that's the perception that we're always trying to, you know, I said this a while back, like I wanted to get tough. I wanted to wear the armor. I wanted to be sword and shield, you know, form the wall, you know, we've watched all the fucking movies, Vikings, Gladiators, you know, and now it's like, yeah, I got tough, but now it's like, I need to like take this fucking armor off, like, and like be soft again, be gentle again, be kind again. I mean, kind more than anything, you know, like it's so easy for me to fucking in my head anyway, like, you know, someone cuts me off in a vehicle or, yeah, it's so easy for me to fucking like really feel that fucking anger, you know, I'm that temper, you know, and that's what I was saying earlier. It's I'm better now at checking that and like harnessing it. But I think a lot of us fucking feel that, man. It's once you go barbaric, truly, you know, stones, sticks, hatchets, swords, they're all the same. You're still ending in life. Once you go that route and you do this taboo societal thing that you're not supposed to do, it's against the law. You can't murder anybody, but oh, by the way, for the king and the queen and the president,
you can do it.
Go do this fucking thing.
Yeah.
Your religion says don't do it. And then you can do it now. And then you come back, but don't do it to anyone else. You know, I don't want to do it anymore, obviously, either. But like, dude, it's kind of hard to come back. It's like a pit bull or a lion that's been wild or whatnot. Now you got them in a fucking cage in a way, you know, it's, I don't want to say you're a time bomb, but dude, you're an animal that's got some scars. You've seen some shit. So that's the challenge. That's the challenge is keeping that dam back and locking that key away to that bear with teeth. That's got like one eye and scars on his face and, you know, keep him asleep, like make that bear hibernate, you know? So
I think the only way we can truly do that is if we, you know, drop the stigma of the alpha male environment that we've come from, has forged you into that creature, and be able to talk about it, not just with, you know, the people that was there and experienced the same perspective of that moment with us, but also with our loved ones. Because I do believe that coming back and locking yourself away mentally and verbally from our partners, I think that's why a lot of marriages failed with veterans returning back, or, you know, just coming back from deployments. Why a lot of the marriages failed, a lot of relationships failed. And I think that's got a lot to blame for it. But so I think opening up and talking about these things is definitely a big step forward.
Yeah, 100%, man. And putting time into yourself, like really putting time into, you know, for myself as an example, like I'm really trying to like do things that I actually love. Like I'm not gonna lie, man. I Googled how to love myself at 2 o'clock in the morning one night back in California with my dog in my bed, like how to love yourself. Like, what is that even? Because like historically for me, without going down this sad story about past relationships with me that I messed up every one of them, to be honest with you. And I could say that now because I don't ever want to do it again, but it's keeping people at distance, right? Let them all the way in to about arm's length. And then now that you're there, like, I'm afraid to let you in this far because I don't know what else. I don't know what that looks like for me. Yeah. So just taking the time to like explore yourself and like what is it I actually like to do? Like what the word love, I mean, truly, we'll talk about it, man. Like I've been really trying to lead in love my life and lead with my heart for the first time in my life. And that's sad at 43, but hey, I'm glad I'm doing it fucking now and not be fearful like where it takes me. Like what, be kind to fucking people, help strangers out, man. Like I really want to live the second part of my life, like giving more than I've taken, however you say it. So, you know, it's sad. It's taken this long for me as an individual to get to this point, but I'm glad I'm at least there now, you know, and at least open, and I've got an ear and an eye open towards it. So, valuing friendships and learning from other fucking people, right? But I think that makes you I think we're protectors, like guys like you and I, like we want to help, we want to protect, we want to do the right thing, we want to help those in need. And I still want, that's still me, you know? So it's a fine line, I think, of, I don't want to be complacent, you know, like I don't want to be weak in the sense of someone's going to take advantage of me physically in a moment, say at a gas station and try to rob me. And I'm just like, you know, like I'm still going to smash you if I need to. But I think there's a trap in this like alpha mentality, like you said too, you know, it's like, you can't be a robot. You can't be hard all the fucking time. You know, like there's moments of where you need to turn it on and turn it off. So it's kind of like that bear analogy. Like I'm trying to have it off most of the time, but the chest, the armor, you know, that movie with Mel Gibson, The Patriot.
Yeah.
You know, the fucking, you know, the redcoats were there in his backyard, man. And he didn't want to fucking fight. He fought previously, but he went back to his fucking chest and he broke out his fucking musket and his hatchet and, you know, the armor basically. And like, I know where it's at, it's not too far behind me, you know, and if I need to grab it, I fucking will, but I hope I never have to again. So, but I don't know, the world's still pretty fucking crazy. So, especially in 2023.
Not wrong.
Especially really close to where you're at.
Yeah, we're a stone's throw away from
the mess
in Ukraine and Eastern Europe, and having Russian bears poke our air defenses around the UK. It's worrying times, but like you say, you know, my shield and armor is incredibly close to me, and I'm ready to use it if necessary.
Yeah, I think my trap is I was trying to live so much mentally, at least internally, in that mindset of just being tough and like aggressive all the fucking time, and that's an angry too, because in the military I think we use anger as like fuel in a way. Like I use the term, like, you can't fight happy. Like fighting and happy truly don't fucking go together, you know. Like even if like I save some fucking kid and from this predator dude or something, right? And I have to fucking smash this guy to death. Like, I don't really want to do that. I will, and I'll feel proud that I did it later to protect this kid, but it's fucking sad it even got to that fucking point. So that's where I'm at now, is trying to live balanced, happy, chill until it's time to turn that light switch on, and I hope it stays off for a while.
Now, obviously behind you've got Savage Actual, which is, yeah, become your sort of podcast, your half of it. Where did the inspiration for that come from?
My buddy, co-host Patrick Moltrip, he is a private marine turned Navy SWCC. He was a boat guy for the NSW. And it was really him and his wife found like there was a calling for two special operations veterans for a reaction video series to video games with a YouTube channel called Gameology. And that's where it was. Like, hey, dude, you still living up in LA? And I'm like, nah, I just moved to San Diego. I'm back in San Diego because I was in LA for like a year. He's like, well, shit, I got this thing. It's like one day, it's like six different videos. I pay X amount for this day. You want to come up here and jack your job out video games? And I'm a video gamer. So I was just like, fuck it, let's do it. And we did it. And that was kind of the inspiration. And definitely he took the reins on that. I'll give him all the credit. Like, yo, we should do this ourselves. We could do something similar and different. And he tried for like a month, like, you know, basically begging me. He's like, dude, come on, let's fucking do this. And said, finally, yeah, let's do it. And then, you know, very quickly it got to where it is now. So it's been a fun ride, man.
Do you feel that, you know, that's helped you personally from doing that?
You know, yeah, because I get to talk to guys like you, you know, like, and I mean that humbly, man, and honorably. Like I've met a lot of cool fucking people and was sponsored by Black Rifle and had their support for it. And we've met some really interesting people, man. And it's given me time to think about some things too. And I've watched some of the videos of myself speak, which is kind of a weird thing to do, to watch yourself speak. So it's forced me to think a lot more about what I'm going to say. And how I'm gonna live as well, you know. So yeah, man, it's been cool, and we've got some big ideas. And you know, I've always been a gamer, so yeah, one day I hope to create my own game, and we're getting into the airsoft realm, which is kind of weird and new. And I'm looking at it strictly, you know, as fun. And I used to talk a lot of shit about it, but it actually is pretty fun. And you're outdoors, you're off the couch and shooting each other with little BBs, you know, like you got to go home, you know, it doesn't have to be for a political reason. You just go, it's like tag, you know, with BBs. So it's actually pretty fun.
Do you think that also helps stem the craving for that chaos of a gunfight, like we were talking about earlier, doing that sort of airsoft military simulation? Do you find it is, if you got some of your, you know, your comrades in and in, you were doing it, do you think it would be that, or is it very much civilians coming in just wanting a taste of you know, what you lived?
You know, I think it's, how do I say this, man, I don't get a fix from doing, okay. I mean, I grew up playing like a lot of the young boy stuff, right? Like in the sense of like hide and seek. I loved it. We did it like a group of fucking neighborhood kids. I've been doing it for a long time at night, especially. Hide and seek was so fun. It's just hiding and finding and hunting, and it all kind of goes together. So it kind of checks that box of like moving from a point to a point without getting attacked. Yeah. And getting the drop on them. So it does like give me a fix to some degree of that, but it's fun and it's harmless for the most part. You know, it's like, I'm not ending a life. It's like, I'm putting a welt on a guy's face or shooting a dude in the fucking, in the chest. And it does hurt a little bit. I'm not going to fucking lie, man, dude. Like that would have hit me in the teeth. That would have knocked my tooth out. So it's like, that threat of getting like zinged by a good one, right? Like it's there. So it's, you know, it's fun at the end of the day. So I'm not doing it to like kind of relive moments overseas, because I'm pretty fucking over like 99% of that. So at least, especially the political view that I have about it all now, without going down that fucking road. But yeah, man, I mean, it's, we could speak about it, right? Because we're the guys that chose to do it. You know, I wasn't some dude that watched it and like think I have an opinion. Your opinion is valid, right? But like, we were the guys in the arena, right? You know, that famous quote, like the blood, the sweat and the tears. Like I chose to fucking do it. I chose to be the grunt. I chose to pick up the sword, and I did, and I could speak about it. But I could speak about my individual experience and not the collective as a sense, because each guy collectively has his own experience, but there are similarities with each. So. You know, I did the invasion. I did Fallujah. I went to Afghanistan, State Department, CIA. You know, I basically hung it all up in like 2016. And I still do some pretty random stuff. But, you know, I was in Kurdistan, northern Iraq for a long time, and fell in love with the Kurds there and saw the influence of Iran and Turkey and fucking ISIS. Like, what a fucking mess, dude. So. Yeah, man, I'm at that point now, dude. Like, if a war kicked off, I think I might just go to a fucking island and go surf and like eat fish and fucking chill out, man. Like, it's once the bear gets awake again, you know, it's gonna be hard to quiet that creature again. So, you know, the current state's pretty fucking crazy, man. I mean, truly. I'm gonna use this section. So, would you say a lot of your listeners are there in the UK?
50-50, looking through the demographic of Spotify and YouTube, the majority are US by about 5%, and then it's UK, and then it's separated after that. So yeah. The biggest listeners are probably USA and then UK.
So we just interviewed Dean Stott, SBS guy, who's fucking amazing. I've hung out with a lot of Brits over the years, and I fucking love you guys, man. Like, you guys, you have an amazing culture, and obviously, like, a lot of my lineage is tied back to the old days in England. And so there's always been this respect, I think, towards England that I've had individually, for sure. But also knowing that you guys, I mean, you as the military, supported us and went overseas and got some with us. The older I've gotten, the more I've realized, in comparison, how a soldier, a military member in the UK gets treated governmentally compared to us, like from the Veterans Administration here. Yeah. And it's a complete fucking travesty that you guys don't have a veteran, a VA like we do, and then you guys aren't getting a pension for PTSD or a fucking ailment. It's fucking mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Like, it, like, I don't want to fight really anymore, but like that cost to me fighting for you guys, in a sense, my voice, at least, however small it is, like, it's fucked up, dude. Like, and it really bothers me to hear veterans like yourself not get taken care of the way we do here. And I think it's kind of shit here. I mean, I do. It could be a lot better, but you guys don't have a goddamn thing comparatively. Am I wrong in this?
Or no. You hit the nail on the head there. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I do my podcast is to try and raise the awareness of veterans in the UK to the standard of the veterans in the US. Because I admire veteran foundations, veteran startups that are happening in the US, how the veteran community look after each other. Even, you know, the VA is, as much as it is given negative views by some of the veterans that I've spoken to, it still provides a service. Yes, they try and paint everybody with the same paintbrush of, you know, you have PTSD, you have depression, without actually going into root causes of finding things. But right. Again, there is a service there. And you've got people like Marcus Capone, who's doing vets, you know, exploring hallucinogenics, ayahuasca to help with TBIs and mental illnesses, Warrior Hearts Healing.
Yep.
And then you got veteran companies like Eagles and Angels. I've got a few of the hats behind me that, you know, almost turn veterans into a form of celebrity with, you know, celebrating their accomplishments, selling part of their uniform in a hat that you can own. And then most of that money goes to a charity. You know, it's incredible what the US and what the US veterans are doing. And, you know, I really want to bring that to the UK. I think my ultimate goal would be to set up a charity where we could send British veterans to vets in America, to, you know, Marcus, and, you know, send them down.
Yes.
Send them down that route for healing. Because, you know, like you say, once you leave the military in the UK, it seems to be the door slams behind you and that's it. And that just seems to be the way it has been.
It's really mind-boggling to me because, you know, I feel bad for even asking this, but it's, for the most part, it's still a volunteer service for you, correct?
Correct. It hasn't been mandatory service since the 1950s. I think 1950s, they finished service. National service, that's what they call it, national service. And then, it's finished. It is all voluntary. It's people, you know, 18-year-old kids thinking, yeah, I want to join the military. I want a career in that. And they sign up and, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, talking to Dean the other day, you know, a little bit about this, and, you know, my other brothers from the UK, it's like, it's crazy, man, because it's to me, as an outsider, it's kind of your recruiting aspect, you know, it's really hard to recruit young guys to join the organization, to join the military, knowing that on the back end, there's not going to be, if I get fucked up, which the chance physically more than anything, like there's not going to really be really any support on the back end. So that's kind of scary. So there's got to be, and you nailed it on the head, dude. I've thought so many times of how we could raise money collectively, you know, and really team up to send, you know, 20, 30 guys that were together in a platoon over here and do something with fishing or hunting, you know, an ayahuasca DMT. I've done DMT, you know, and it was a life-changing event for me for 2 years, 2 years ago, excuse me. So there's a lot of avenues for growth and like betterment, and it's something needs to be done. You know, now more than ever, the ease of communication and the internet, like there's got to be, you know, there's the broad listening base out there collectively between the US and the UK. Like there's got to be people out there with some power and money to, like, you know, kind of grassroots start taking care of your countrymen that have decided to join, you know, for the empire, for lack of better words. You know, there's got to be.
There are a couple of, charities in the UK that do sort of help veterans, but again, after speaking to other British veterans, they have incredibly negative views about them. I know of one that is actually really, really good, which is called Pilgrim Bandits, and they actually raise money to help veterans who are amputees live life to the full. So they might be sending them to climb Mount Everest,
Wow.
And I think they've literally just sent the first double amputee to go up Mount Everest as well. So I know Pilgrim Bandits do a lot for that respect, but when it comes to actually perhaps a medical side and with TBIs and PTS and depression, then I don't think there's that much that is available in the UK.
I tell you what's helped me out a lot is physical fitness.
Yep.
And making that a priority. You know, I've got a triathlon coming up July 9th. It's kicking my ass, you know, training for it again. I'm not in my 20s, I'm not running as fast as I used to, but having goals, you know, setting the goals, following through with them, staying busy, staying for the most part pretty fucking sober. And honestly, physical fucking fitness, PT, man, I've noticed a big decline in mental health with friends and family that just like get off of that and becoming an inside dog, you know, and like not doing things anymore. You know, you got to stay active, like whatever it is, like whatever gives you joy, if it's football, if it's archery, if it's fucking reading a book, it's something. I mean, fuck reading a book, like it's something physical.
Yeah.
You know, that is honest, pure, you know, endorphins and dopamine hits that are real, you know, and you can repeat that and over, and it's a good thing. So I don't know. I think that's been my saving fucking grace for sure, is physical fitness. So I wish more veterans could hear that and try that. I mean, do it for fucking 6 months, and I guarantee it, after 6 months of hitting it hard, you're going to feel fucking great. You'd be like, he's right, you know? So, and then most of those guys know it to be true in the heart. I mean, especially if you're an older guy now, like an older veteran, like, dude, remember how you were physically in your fucking 20s. Like, that's attainable still.
Yeah.
With diet, with fucking sleep, you know, sober fucking sleep, you know, contacting your boys, get your boys together, go do something together. You know, we just had a reunion in Montana, and a lot of us from Generation Kill were there. It was a recon reunion. So it was amazing. There was 38 of us there. A lot of those guys I hadn't seen since 2003 and 2004. So I don't know, man. I wish I could help you out on that, dude. I don't know how that even looks.
But it'd be something I'd have to work on in the future. I don't know where, I don't know how myself, how it would look at the moment, but it is my pipe dream to set something up like that.
Yeah. Something's got to be done. Plus it'd give me a reason to come to England.
Absolutely.
Where are you at right now, man?
I'm on the East Coast, a place called Lincolnshire. So I'm literally, if I went outside, I could probably throw a stone and hit the beach.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, not warm water.
It's not been too bad today. It's been about 28 degrees outside.
Okay. So,
it's
not bad.
It's been fairly warm. It's been good so far this week.
Yeah. I cut you off, man. What were you going
to
say?
I was going to say, I just wanted to give two questions to sort of wrap up the interview. The first one would be, what knowledge would you impart to your younger self that was just about to go sign that contract for the Marines? As you sit there now, what would you advise your younger self just before he signed that bit of paper?
I've got a lot of things to say. One, take a lot of pictures, and not of yourself. Fuck selfies. Take pictures of your friends and family, and spend a lot of time with your friends and family, because in 20 years, a lot of those older family members are going to be gone. You think they're going to last forever, these Christmases and Thanksgivings and holidays, reunions, birthdays, but they start disappearing quickly. Go to every wedding that you can. Go to every funeral that you can. Don't let go of home. Don't let go of friends, even civilian friends that you make. Hold on to them. Give it 100%. Stay single. I truly mean that. Stay single. If you're really serious, especially on the fighting side of things, whether it be soft or whether it be the infantry, stay single. Cause that's, you're taking away from your team, being distracted emotionally and mentally. You'll be a better soldier. You'll be a better teammate. when you have that distraction gone. And it affected me deeply. You know, I was not fully committed. You know, I was, but I wasn't. So it just should be a lot less stressful staying single. You can really focus on your job, and that's what you should be doing. Serious job. Yeah, man, and have fun. Like, really be a fucking teammate. Like, know your guys and be the papa bear. You know, try to take care of your team. You know, lead that way. Lead from the front.
Some good advice. And my last question would be, what advice would you give to somebody who is looking to transition out of the forces, who's looking to, you know, leave and join civilian life? What would be your advice to them?
Take a walkabout. Get out. If you're going to get out, go solo. Like, go on a fucking trip, or maybe you and a boy, and go travel the fucking world. I'm not for the king and the queen, not for America, not for the government. Go travel the fucking world. You know, go to Asia, go to fucking Vietnam, go somewhere third world for the most part. Go to Europe, I don't know, go somewhere and just go take a fucking walkabout for a month. You earned it. And go do some soul searching and hiking and eat some cool food and then come back, you know. And yeah, but kind of come up with a plan, and it's going to change. You know, like, you don't have to figure it out in one day. If you don't have a fucking plan when you get out, hey, you made it out. It's like prison. It's an institution. They're going to find your way. And there's going to be ups and downs. It's not going to be easy, but nothing is. So, I mean, it makes those moments even sweeter when they are good. So, but take it serious, you know, and I don't know. Just give it. Don't half-ass it. Give it 100 for sure. And catch up with some people that were a part of your life that kind of made you who you are before the military, and link back up with them.
Yeah, I like that. That's good. Well, thank you very much for joining us on this episode. Brilliant speaking to you. You've got some wonderful insights, and there's a lot of things that I can relate with what you were saying, and also your life journey. So, yeah, thank you very much indeed for coming on the show. You've been brilliant.
Of course. Thanks, man. It's been an honor to be here.
Thank you very much.
My name's Christian Holloway. I spent a little over 10 years in the military. I was in the Marine Corps. Spent the majority of that time in MARSOC, and had a few deployments to Iraq, 3 combat deployments. And please join me on the next episode of Kit Cage.